Hey everyone, it's the Kung Fu Genius, aka Alex Richter. And if you're listening to us on audio only, I'd appreciate you rating and reviewing the podcast wherever you listen to it. And of course, if you like what I do here, don't forget to subscribe to the Kung Fu Genius on YouTube and hit that bell for notifications. Are you a fan of Wing Chun Kung Fu? Well, if you listen to me, I assume you are. I got great news for Kung Fu Genius fans. Right now, you can get an all-access one-month free trial subscription to Wing Chun Illustrated Magazine. Yes, I said free. Go to WCINewsstand.com and register in the upper right-hand corner, fill in your email and password, and use the code KFGTRIAL to get your free trial to the issues from 2011 to the current issue. That's right, all the issues, even the one with this guy on the cover. My Kung Fu Genius column is in all the new issues, as if you need another reason to get this awesome magazine. Go get your free trial subscription today. For all that information, check out the description below. And with that, let's get started.
All right, peeps, on today's episode of the Kung Fu Genius, the genius will be answering all sorts of hot nonsense from YouTube. Lots of gems, lots of training for prison, lots of Bruce Lee would have made a great Yoda. Let's get to it.
He is unstoppable, unbeatable, unbelievable. He's Alex Richter, the Kung Fu Genius.
And every day, I practice martial arts. What's up?
Word is, I'm a Kung Fu Genius. Practice all day like a genius.
Yo, Dre, how you doing, man?
Oh, nilly-nilly.
That's what's up. So here we are again. We got another Ask the Genius Anything episode. We just did the Ted Thomas talk last time. And surprisingly, we did that entire conversation in one episode.
For real?
Yeah. I was a little upset. I thought we'd at least milk four episodes of that. When you're a content provider and your content is all 50 years old, you tend to go, how can we squeeze this over the course of multiple episodes, right?
Milk was dry.
That's right. That was powdered milk. But we do have another one that we'll be doing, which is the Alex Ben Block one. We'll do that one next. That one is a little bit longer than the Ted Thomas one, if I recall.
It's so hopefully the famous B. Water one, right?
No, that's the Pierre Burton one. That was the TV
that's
one.
The TV. The we one. Should do that,
we should do that too. Yeah. No, the Alex Ben Block one is another audio one, like the Dan Lee one and the Ted Thomas one. So one thing I recently did a little bit of research on Ted Thomas. He worked for the radio in Hong Kong, and he had like a number of jobs in Hong Kong working for different companies. And apparently face for radio and a voice for television. But apparently one of the things that he did is he was the English dub of Bruce Lee. So that guy who interviewed Bruce Lee, apparently he did the English version of. I read it somewhere really quick, so I have to follow up a little bit on that. So I think that's kind of interesting.
That's really cool.
You know, for all my Bruce Lee trivia and knowledge, there are a couple areas of Bruce Lee where I'm really very ignorant on, and that is on the English dubbed versions of his films, because I watched those in the 80s because that's all you had. But the moment I was able to get like the Chinese versions and hear them in Cantonese and so on and so forth, like, I don't watch those movies dubbed in English. They're absolutely terrible. So there are some people like my friend Hector, they're like, they can quote all of the lines in the English dubbed version. Yeah. And like, I can't do that because that's not really the version that I've watched the most. So anyway, we got some questions. Let's get to it.
I think it's time. All right. So first we got Mod. KF Martial Arts.
All right.
Hello, Sifu. Loving the podcast. I've got two questions.
Awesome.
What is your best advice for someone who's trying to start a martial arts school? And to Dre, or whoever is taking his place, what?
That's weird. It's because it's always you. We've never had anyone take your place.
What got you into Wing Chun and how did you find City Wing Chun? Ooh, I like this.
Wow, that's uninteresting.
allow me to take that.
Yeah, which Dre should we get to answer that question? So, the first thing is you got to find something that really speaks to you, right? Mm. And a lot of people think that it's a kind of straightforward, logical choice in terms of, you know, you pick style XYZ because it's got these characteristics. But usually the reason why people pick a martial arts school is because they come in and they like it. There's something about the vibe of the school, obviously the style. It has to be something that they can see themselves doing, right? If you're mm-hmm. someone that likes to grab and grapple and you like the gi, you're going to feel comfortable in like a jiu-jitsu school. And if you like Chinese martial arts or you like striking, you're going to be, you know, more comfortable in a kung fu school. And if you like kickboxing, that's your thing, right? So, you know, really the reason why people choose a martial arts school is a lot more emotional than intellectual, right? So, you know, I'm of the opinion that if you find something that really speaks to you and you really like it, well, you should really go all in. I mean, you should really try to learn as much as you can. You mm-hmm. should study as much as you can. And, you know, ask your teacher, you know, what are the resources and things that you should look at? Because one of the issues we have is like, you know, we'll have brand new students join and they don't know this Wing Chun from that Wing Chun. And then they're starting to learn and they like it. And then what do? They go on YouTube and teach themselves the Chum Q before they're ready for Chum Q. But they don't even realize that the Chum Q that they're learning on YouTube is maybe another version and maybe doesn't quite fit with the way we teach it. And there's a reason why they're not learning the Chum Q yet in our school. They're not ready, right? So you sometimes have people who are like kind of jumping ahead and they don't know. And so I would kind of, the advice I would give people who are starting a martial arts school is don't be that person in whatever martial art you're doing.
Take it as it comes.
Yeah. All right. Cool. And then the second question is for you, right? Ooh. So how did you find out about when you had done some martial arts before you came here, right?
I way back in the day, I was in, well, of course, watching kung fu flicks and as a kid, right?
Right.
But I never, you know, had that opportunity, you know, to do anything back when I was a kid. When I was a young adult, I remember I had a friend. I was really into computers at the time, but my computer sucked ass.
All right.
It was a
that's why you still don't know how to use Google Drive.
It was a Dell computer, right? And I remember this Dell would always break down. My friend, shout out to Alberto, he would say, "Yo, bro, you gotta get a Mac, bro." He would always tell me to get a Mac.
Uh-huh.
And then I remember one time I mentioned martial arts to him.
Yeah.
"Yo, bro, you gotta do Wing Chun, bro. You gotta, like, that's the art Bruce Lee did, bro." And that was his thing. He would always tell me this. And eventually I got a Mac.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, this dude knows his shit.
Uh-huh.
Eventually, right? Of course, back in the day, I tried Aikido.
Uh-huh. What's back in the day? We're talking 80s or 90s or what?
Like 2000-ish.
2000-ish.
Right.
Okay.
I was in my early 20s. I wanted to do some martial arts. I tried Aikido. I liked it. But there was no striking.
Right.
Eventually, I found the JKD school.
Right.
A lot of striking.
Yeah.
A lot of grappling, a lot of everything. Then I had to choose between music or martial arts.
Uh-huh.
I actually chose music.
Mm-hmm.
But I knew I wanted to get into something.
People don't know you're actually a nude harpist.
Nude harpist.
Yes.
The hell is a nude harpist?
Someone who plays the harp nude.
Okay. Right.
Okay. People don't know that. You have an extensive background.
I didn't know.
The funny thing is they also don't use their hands.
Right. I didn't know there was a term for what I did.
They don't use their hands. Oh, my God.
I didn't know it was a term for it.
Yes.
But
he did it, but he didn't know.
I knew that after I made that dumb decision to stop doing martial arts, I wanted to get back in. I'm working at a hotel, and at the time, I was just randomly looking at my phone. I go on Facebook. One of my friends liked the school.
Uh-huh.
He doesn't practice any martial arts, uh-huh. but he liked the school.
Beautiful.
Right? And I'm like, man, at this time, I'm thinking about getting back in for a couple years. And I look at the school that he likes, I'm like, wow, okay, where is it? I press the little, where's the address? And the two little pins drop right next to each other, meaning said the school was right next to me. And I'm like, how is the school right next? Like, and then I find out it's around the corner.
Uh-huh. Well, you're working at a hotel over here, right?
Yes, right on a couple blocks away.
Got it.
I come in and my CJ Nicole is at the door.
There you go.
And that was it. That's all I needed.
Yeah.
She welcomed me with open arms. She was super hospitable. And the vibe was really dope.
Yeah.
Got my intro lesson with my CJ.
Yeah.
And
the rest is history.
I was like, nah.
Beautiful.
I'm in.
That's
I'm
a great story, man.
Yeah, but she did it for me.
Yeah. Definitely.
Yeah, cool, yeah. Cool, not cool. You, but she did.
Whatever. I want enough. The only reason.
You were still a picture on the wall.
I was still a picture on the wall. I was a hypothetical.
Yeah, yeah.
If I did your intro, you wouldn't have been signed up that night. I'd be like, I don't know about this dude here. I don't know about this dude. This guy's kind of sketch.
Sketch
Nicole, city. Nicole is a lot less discerning than I am.
Yeah. She's a sweetheart.
Yeah.
But she killed me.
I'm sure.
But she sold me some shit.
Yeah. Awesome.
All right, so next up, we got C.T. Leffler. Since Wing Chun is, according to legend, a practical distillation of Shaolin martial arts, can techniques from traditional Shaolin martial arts be easily mixed with Wing Chun to augment it? Or is Wing Chun a self-contained style that already has what it needs from the old arts?
That's a good question. I feel I answered something similar to this on our last AMA, the one that we did before the Ted Thomas one, mm-hmm. which was about like mixing the animal styles. Remember, we talked about that a little bit, right?
Similar, but
that's both a complicated question and mm-hmm. also a simple. I mean, I could give a simple answer and be like, well, you can mix anything you want. I mean, it's up to the individual, right? If you have the right understanding of martial arts and the background and the physical conditions to do certain movements and the know-how, I mean, mix all the question I always, so what I always kind of want to know, I wish I could answer or ask a few questions to the people asking me these questions. It's mm-hmm. like, are you saying, does it function, or are you somehow asking permission from our Wing Chun ancestors? Like, is this okay? Does this make sense or whatever? And I mean, for me, in a modern day and age where the prevalent martial art right now is literally called mixed martial arts, you know, this idea that you have to be super hyper orthodox to your style makes sense if that is your selling point. You know, you want to teach a super traditional lineage of whatever style, let's say Wing Chun, and you're going to do it in that museum piece kind of way, like you are passing on the same museum piece your Sifu gave you. If that's your thing, then obviously the answer is, well, no, because your thing is passing on your line or your tradition. Now, it's a separate argument whether one, that's 100% like possible to actually do that, and two, whether that even still makes sense. Because mm-hmm. if you look at Wing Chun throughout its development, I mean, the Wing Chun from the Qing Dynasty was not the Wing Chun from the late, you know, the mid-1850s is not the same as towards the end of the Qing Dynasty. It's not the same as what was done in Hong Kong. So even before we get into these modern conversations of adapting and mixing or changing things or whatever, I mean, if you could go in a time machine and look at the old Wing Chun, you would see that it's changed, that it's adapted, right? This idea that people really think, even some people within the Yip Man family, mm-hmm. they really believe that the thing they are teaching their students is the same thing that Leung Bok Chau did or got from Yim Wing Chun. And this is ridiculous, okay? This is absolutely ridiculous.
Okay.
There's nothing that we can actually see in terms of the development of the various lineages that would even indicate that that's even possible in any style. I doubt very highly the Choi Lei Phut of any current lineage holder is the same as the Choi Lei Phut of the 1940s.
Everything evolves.
Everything evolves, everything changes. The question is, do things evolve and change simply because you mix stuff or because you develop them? Mm-hmm. And so people always talk about mixing stuff. I mean, that seems like a very simple way of looking at it, right? You're going to improve Wing Chun by, you know, in the middle of chain punching, you're going to do a windmill punch from Choi Lei Phut in the middle of that. Like, that's adding a technique from another style. That's a traditional martial arts technique. But does that actually fit with the idea of what you're trying to do in that moment, right? It could, but the simple bolting on of techniques doesn't mean that you have anything cohesive. Like, you would try to build a car using parts from all different types of vehicles. You know, you have a chassis from a truck, but the wheels are from a go-kart and the engine is from a Yugo, and you have a ski rack from a Subaru on it, right?
Yeah.
Yes, these are all things that can be bolted together theoretically, but is the result a car that actually functions or one that you would even want to drive, right? So I think that we should look to developing the martial arts, and I think that we need to stop thinking about mixing things. Because even if you look at mixed martial arts, you have wrestling and submissions from jiu-jitsu, and you have both boxing and Muay Thai. Mixed martial arts is also about how well you put those things together. So that means that the takedowns that are done in mixed martial arts, they are contextual to the striking, because it's not a pure grappling art where you're just doing takedowns. So that means that there had to have been a development of from transitioning from striking into takedowns. And that's not the same as just adding a takedown to a striking art.
Yeah.
There actually has to be a development in there to make those things work together cohesively.
Yeah.
And so when it comes to development, like, that is the conversation I want to have, is about the development of Wing Chun, the development of the concepts and principles in modern combat, and not this idea that you're going to bolt on, a tiger claw from some kind of random martial art and just put that in the middle of Wing Chun, and somehow that's palatable, right? It's like going to a buffet and eating, 30 different types of food and hoping you don't get indigestion, right? So, or that's not really the way you want to do it, right? So, I hope the conversation changes to development of Wing Chun and not this idea of bolting on random bits.
Yeah, unneeded.
Mm-hmm.
All right, next up, we got Brones Lee.
Brones Lee.
I think that's how
it's a cousin of Bruce Lee.
Brunes.
Uh-huh.
Brones Lee. Do you think Wing Chun is still evolving like MMA? Why in close combat inside the cage we don't see nobody using WC? Keep up the nice content. Greats from the Netherlands.
Awesome. So quick answer, is Wing Chun developing at the same rate? Is that what it is?
Do you think Wing Chun is still evolving like MMA?
In general, no. I mean, well, that's a very easy question to answer. I mean, MMA is constantly evolving and they're constantly adapting things. When new things come out, like, one of the new things right now, they're doing a lot of those calf kicks, which is a variation on low kicks. And this is an evolution, right? So these things are constantly evolving. You can't compare the rate of evolution in mixed martial arts to Wing Chun. I mean, most Wing Chun instructors, and this is a separate argument as to the efficacy of what people are teaching in Wing Chun. But I mean, the driving purpose of most Wing Chun instructors nowadays is not to evolve the art. It's to pass on what they learned from their teacher, right? So this is much more about tradition and passing on this mantle and teaching these set techniques and ideas and teaching Wing Chun in whatever form the different Wing Chun schools teach that in. So most Wing Chun schools are very concerned with passing on things in a way that is faithful to the way they learned it. All right. Now, having said that, there are a number of lineages out there where they are a little bit different than a lot of the traditional lineages. They are developing and evolving, and some of them go a very, very modern route by mixing in ideas of jiu-jitsu, MMA, kickboxing in their Wing Chun. Some of them just redevelop the Wing Chun altogether and change up the way things are done. And some, maybe the way we do things is we kind of update the training methods, how Wing Chun is trained, and we make sure that we're addressing some of the things that are very prevalent nowadays, without fully altering the art or fully just bolting on jiu-jitsu or boxing on there. And so you have a bit of a spectrum within the lineages of Wing Chun that are modernizing or developing or adapting. But outside of that category, most of the other Wing Chun schools, that's the least of their concerns. I mean, hey, if you're accused of teaching the Tan Zhao 5% different than your Sifu, this is like heresy in most Wing Chun schools, right? So I would say that while there's a certain pocket or segment of the Wing Chun world that evolves and adapts, a big part of the Wing Chun and traditional Kung Fu world in general is very much opposed to that, because that's the antithesis of what they're trying to do. They're trying to prove that they're the most loyal and most authentic to their teacher or their lineage, right? So, yeah.
But he also asks, why in close combat inside the cage we don't see nobody using Wing Chun?
Well, I would tend to disagree with that for a couple reasons. To be fair, most mixed martial arts practitioners don't come from a traditional martial arts background. So a lot of the things that traditional martial arts have, not just Wing Chun, but other traditional styles, are off the radar for a lot of mixed martial artists, right? So it's not like that there's an equal opportunity and or an equal dispersion of Wing Chun schools to karate or MMA or jiu-jitsu.
Okay.
So it's not like, when you listen to people who did martial arts when they were young, it's like, oh yeah, I did karate or I did judo or something like that, right? Even nowadays, you know, with mixed martial arts and all this stuff, you still, most people when they were, yeah, I did taekwondo when I was a kid, I did karate when I was a kid, right? You very rarely hear, oh, I did Wing Chun when I was a kid.
Right.
It's very, very rare, right? If you hear something where I did Hongkun when I was a kid or something like that, right? So you have to be mindful of not getting in this trap of thinking like there's an equal dispersion of all the martial arts out there, and in the marketplace of ideas, the average person is just as likely to come across Wing Chun as they are boxing or jiu-jitsu, right? So you have to be mindful of, like, even Wing Chun in this country. I mean, like, the number of Wing Chun, like, actual brick and mortar Wing Chun schools, not even just now, but even in the 80s, was a lot less than karate, taekwondo, and so on and so forth, right? So it's one not as spread as the other martial arts, right? And you could say, well, maybe that's because they weren't as successful in the other, in fighting contests. And I would disagree with that for another reason. The traditional Chinese martial arts sifus normally tended to teach in a very small kind of way. They didn't go like the Japanese or the Koreans and create big professional schools. The Chinese were always, you know, it's always about lineage and teaching one or two people and then passing it on. And if you teach a group class, then, you know, you're watering it down. And then look at, like, all the big karate schools like Kyokushin, who are teaching big classes, and those guys are bangers, or big kickboxing classes or big judo classes, right? It was only the kung fu people that were so afraid of watering it down by teaching more people that they basically allowed their martial arts to languish and disappear for the greater part while the other martial arts were actually developing. And so a lot of that is the fault of the Chinese sifus keeping things too secretive and not allowing these things to develop. And things don't develop in secrecy, they rot.
Mm-hmm.
And so, of course, you have some exceptions for that, some better Wing Chun sifus or more prominent Wing Chun sifus. But still, I mean, where would the average MMA person, where would they see a Wing Chun technique? They're not going to watch the Yip Man movie and go, oh, I'm going to try that. They're not going to do that without instruction.
Right, right.
All right. So you have to be mindful not to ask a question that about why doesn't something exist that doesn't have the chance to exist. Okay. Having said that, I actually see a lot of things in MMA that are very, very similar to Wing Chun,
yes.
Right? And not just talking about the stuff that Anderson Silva or some other people do. When you see, because part of the problem is what people think Wing Chun is, all right? They think it's chain punching, a straight kick to the knee or to the leg, and things like Pak Sao and Lap Sao, all right? And then maybe some simultaneous movements. And they have such a stripped down idea of what Wing Chun is that if they don't see a Bong Sao, they're like, this guy's not doing Wing Chun.
Right.
All right. And it's part of the problem is having an extremely limited view and limited exposure to all the things that Wing Chun has. Like in the wooden dummy, we have the neck pulling hand. So I'll see single neck pulling hand tied in with lifting punches or uppercuts or elbows. And we do this stuff all the time. Well, they also have it in Thai boxing. So, you know, that guy probably got it from Thai boxing, right? But we also have that in Wing Chun, right? So then is that a technique that's effective or not? Well, if they're using it, I would tend to think it's effective, right? You also see, now that oblique kick, right? It was a huge controversy just a few weeks ago with Khalil Roundtree, an MMA fighter. I think he's a middleweight, maybe a light heavyweight. I don't remember. And he used that lead leg side kick to the dude's knee and just the dude buckled and that was the end of it. And now they're talking about making this kick illegal. This kick is right out of the Wing Chun playbook.
Yeah.
I mean, the side kick to the knee, you have that in Wing Chun, you have that in Bruce Lee's Jeet Kune Do. I mean, Bruce Lee was all about that lead leg side kick to the knee, right?
Yeah.
And so it's literally one of the techniques that people are talking about should be banned. Okay, so I don't understand. Like, yeah, maybe he's not using Wing Chun. Like, he didn't learn that from Wing Chun. It's now become an MMA technique. John Jones uses the front leg side kick and uses the rear leg front kick with the toe out. Those are things that we teach in our clinch work and in our long distance kicking training here in Wing Chun. So, I mean, like, the guy's not saying it's Wing Chun, but I literally see Wing Chun there all the time.
I've seen a video of two girls fighting in the bathroom. And one girl is mopping the floor up with this other girl.
I'm sorry, this sounds like a very, very specialist video.
He
didn't see it online. Fight. This is on his his phone.
Uh-huh. This is a school fight, right?
Oh my God, really?
Two girls. One girl is just killing, murdering this other girl. And everything she does is straight out the Wing Chun playbook.
Right.
And I'm just like, this is perfect Wing Chun.
Yeah. And also, just this past weekend, we had that train wreck of the Triller boxing match, right? So you had Anderson Silva versus Tito Ortiz, who came out and was looking... Tito was looking slow, man. I think that fight lasted 75 seconds. And Anderson just kind of rope-a-doped him, and then boom, and the fight was over, right? And Tito had talked some shit about Bruce Lee and Wing Chun in the pre-fight. And Anderson said in the pre-fight, Wing Chun and Bruce Lee saved me in the ring many times, right? And saved me in the cage many times. No, that was before the fight.
Okay, gotcha.
And then they had the fight, and after he starches, you know, it was actually the first and only time that Tito's been out cold in a fight.
Oh.
Because, I mean, he's lost before, but never like, he was out. He was out. And Anderson said, I dedicate this fight, or I want to do this fight for Wing Chun and for Bruce Lee.
Okay.
And so, and definitely saw, I in the past said, well, I didn't really think everything Anderson was doing, because sometimes Anderson would do these kind of hand jive things, right? Which for me was, that's maybe a little bit more of the Filipino martial arts stuff he did when he was training with some of Danny DeSanto's guys. And I would see him do stuff that looked like Wing Chun, but I never make the assumption like, oh, this is Wing Chun just because it looks like it, right? Because you can see, because you always have to be careful not to get into confirmation bias, right? Now, if it turns out that those things he said, no, I specifically saw this in Wing Chun and then did it, I'm okay with being wrong on that, right? But my thing is, like, you also have to not go to the other end and, like, just because someone hit someone with a vertical fist, you go, oh, look, that guy learned it from Wing Chun. Other martial arts use the vertical fist as well. And when you're in the melee of a real fight, you could also just throw a punch and it just happens to be a vertical fist, not by any great design, right? So, but humans are pattern-seeking primates, and people are going to constantly look for these things and be like, see, it's obviously Wing Chun. And I would love for it to be Wing Chun, and if it is, I'm great. But I'm not going to say that just because you see a vertical fist that it is Wing Chun necessarily, right? But, like we've talked about before, certain things work. Different people come up with similar things because we're dealing with the question of violence. So it doesn't have to be labeled as Wing Chun. I'm not looking at it as like, oh, he did a Pak Sao, all right? I'm looking at it as like he's doing a hand control and a check and a simultaneous strike. That idea is something we do in Wing Chun, whether they're calling it a Pak Sao or not, right? Usman, when he knocked out Jorge Masvidal, basically did a Pak Sao and a cross, right? So those are you see those ideas right there. So it's what we do in Wing Chun.
All right.
Cool.
Dope.
Next question.
Samara. Nice episode. Question.
Great. You know, because I don't know where these are being pulled from, I never know which episode they're talking about. I'm like, all right.
Okay.
I'll take any compliment.
Yes.
All right.
Imagine Bruce Lee would not have died in 1973.
Okay.
Sounds like a hypothetical. And would have starred in the movie Star Wars, The Empire Strikes Back in 1980. Oh, okay. I like the way this is going because it's 80s Bruce Lee.
Yeah.
Would he have played a Jedi or a Sith? What do you think? And imagine what great fight scenes he would have choreographed.
Wow, interesting. Yeah, it's like combining two things that I really like, Bruce Lee and Star Wars there, right? Well, it's difficult to imagine Star Wars different, especially the original trilogy. We can imagine the new sequel trilogy doesn't exist, and we'd be happier with any other version of that. But the original trilogy, I think it would be cool, although he would have been still a little bit too young at that time, to to have reimagined, even though I know he says it's Empire Strikes Back, but to have reimagined Obi-Wan as Bruce Lee. Because I think, like, you know, you have to have the young, like, kind of starry-eyed hero, right? So you have to, like, Luke has to be someone, because he starts out kind of whiny and starry-eyed, mm-hmm. and then he develops into Bruce already by 77 would have been... He's too macho to be like the Luke Skywalker guy, right? But you can imagine if they reimagine like the Obi-Wan character, because you have this wise teacher, right? And then he would either be that, or you would have to totally reimagine Yoda and have Bruce Lee be the Yoda character, right? Just, can you imagine him with the pointy ears or something like that, right? Except that, you know, part
coming
of...
Coming out the Bruce Lee
throw. Yeah, except that part, you know, part of, like, Luke meeting Yoda is that he didn't know that Yoda was a Jedi Master, and I think it would have been much more obvious if Bruce...
How about this for a concept? Why not reimagine him as Darth Vader? Why does he have to be the good guy?
Uh-huh. That's what we ask him. Is he...
Well, because I think
Jedi or Sith.
The reason is Bruce is 5'7", okay? That's the reason why.
Yeah, Darth was like 6'5".
Okay,
yeah,
fine.
Yeah, enough. So the problem is, you know, for Darth Vader, you need to have someone who's physically imposing. I mean, like, Bruce Lee was many things, but, like, you know, physical behemoth was not one of them, right?
So cross code man instead.
Yeah, so I think that the you know, him being like the philosophical war, because you can almost imagine a lot of the Yoda-isms coming out of Bruce Lee's mouth, right? You know, there's no try, there's only do, right? You know, like, right. You can imagine him saying those things and being that character, but it's very difficult to, I don't know if the casting would have been right, but yeah, who knows?
Wow,
it's a good, I like these thought experiments, they're fun.
What about the fight scenes? If so, let's say they brought him on as a fight choreographer,
yeah. Well, I mean, they would have been better. So one of my complaints with George Lucas is when he did the prequels, all right, which are problematic on their own, right? But what did he do? He got Ray Park, who played Darth Maul, who's like an amazing wushu artist. And then suddenly they had like all this kind of more intricate martial arts in the prequels, right? And you right. see like what they were like, even Phantom Menace, which is it's difficult film to get through from beginning to end, but when you look at like the fight scene at the end with Darth Maul, like, that's pretty spectacular. The problem with George Lucas is this: I get now you got better CGI and you got better things than you had in the 70s, but you're effing up your story, because if they're fighting like this in the pre-story, then explain the like Darth Vader and Obi-Wan in New Hope basically swinging like my dad using a broom at home, okay? Because then it's not congruent. You're like, these dudes were doing all this stuff when they were earlier, when they were younger, I should say, and now when they're older, yeah, of course, you don't expect them to move the same way, but...
The skill is there.
The skill is not there, right? And it's just like, it's really lazy, right? And in all three of the movies, you don't have really super good saber fighting. All right, but that was never the point of the original Star Wars, because it was the storytelling that won everyone over, right? It wasn't the CGI and all the stuff that Lucas thought was going to make the prequels great. No, dude, it's the story, stupid, right? Because even the story beats in the fight of Empire Strikes Back. I mean, remember Luke finally, he hastily decides to fight Darth Vader when he's not ready, against the wishes and against the advice of Yoda and Obi-Wan, right? He's not ready to fight Vader. And when he starts fighting Vader, what does Vader do at first? He fights him with one arm.
Yeah.
Right? Because he's like not in his league. Right? And then you see, like, he's basically toying with him the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
And then in Return of the Jedi, then he comes back, he's a lot more skillful. So the story beats are very consistent. But then in the prequels, he decides to make the fight scenes way more intricate and way more dynamic. But the problem is, it's not congruent with the way they fought later in the story, even though those movies were made first. It's supposed to be the story later, right? So... maybe with someone like Bruce Lee, the fights could have been better, but Bruce was not a sword fighting guy. Like, people forget that, right? His thing was, you know, hand fighting, fist fighting, choreography, right? It wasn't, I mean, he did stuff with weapons, but like, if you are a Hollywood producer and you want to do saber fighting, you don't get the guy who's like the kick and punch guy, you get the saber guy, right? So I don't think Bruce would have been ideally suited for that, but it would have been cooler if they had some better saber fights in the original, keeping the same story beats, but just have better choreography and keep them all a little bit more consistent, right? Mm. Now, a lot of people retcon, why was the Vader and Obi-Wan fight so boring, you know, and they're like, oh, well, you know, he's older and Vader's a machine or whatever, but they're just literally retconning the fact that the choreography was kind of shit.
Okay.
And later, Lucas decided to go with more spectacular choreography, so what do the fans need to do? They need to retcon it in their headcanon so that it makes sense, but these are just, it's just sloppy writing. It's just inconsistencies.
Well, and on top of that, that's ruined in Revenge of the Sith when Count Dooku, who is also clearly a very old Christopher Lee.
Yes, is fighting really well.
Fighting really well.
Yeah, and Yoda, who's also really old, because Yoda was like 800, 900 years old, he said.
Yeah.
So in Revenge of the Sith, he's...
He's killing it.
But he's also, yeah. He's only like 30 years or 20 years younger than he was later. So I mean, he's still fighting like he's on speed.
Yeah.
All right. So yeah, the problem is Lucas really stepped on his dick with the consistency of the fight scenes in those movies, right?
You know what upset me? That my favorite character didn't even have a fight scene.
Jar Jar Binks?
Yeah.
Damn, why'd I know Jar Jar Binks was your favorite character?
Isn't he everyone's favorite character?
You know what's funny? Now that, like, because I didn't know you back then. But I can imagine when people went to go see Phantom Menace when it came out, he was the only dude laughing at like all the Jar Jar Binks one-liners. Like he'd be like, ha! And everyone's just like...
And he's tapping the guy next to him just going, no, but seriously.
Dude,
right?
Seriously. This Jar Jar, yo, this Jar Jar Binks guy is going to be a hit.
That's my guy,
that's
Jar Jar.
That's your Jar right there, Jar Jar. Yeah.
Jar.
Piece of crazy.
He...
Yeah. All right, next question.
All right. Thank you, Samara. All right. Next up, we got Dryzen. And Huffing and Puffing.
Only thing I can say is, unlike the last episode where we had Dryzen, at least he's not asleep this time. The last Dryzen question, I go over, I look at him to get his reaction, and he's just like...
He was down for the count.
Yeah, he was out.
I don't think he had a coffee that day.
No,
right?
No, he didn't have a coffee that day.
None of us had a coffee that day. All right, so anyway, Dryzen, hypothetical.
He always asks hypotheticals.
Does he?
Yeah.
I didn't even notice that.
Yeah. Does he? I didn't even notice that.
I know. I didn't even notice that.
And the Oscar goes to your headphones.
Well, let's just hear him out, all right? Let's just say you're training down in your new crib in Orlando.
Okay.
And all of a sudden, someone outside your garage beeping their car horn or frantic being annoying.
Okay.
Burr, 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 burr. I don't know, whatever the car horn sounds like.
What did car horn sound like in his mind?
After about a minute or so of this disruption, you head outside to see a souped up DeLorean. With Doc and Marty McFly inside.
Unbelievable. The actual Doc and Marty McFly or the actors that played
them?
No,
these are the actual actors that, but they're legit.
Okay.
They're yelling at you. Sifu! Yo, Sifu, hop in! You hop in. Because, you know...
This doesn't sound like me at all.
But you hop in because you
this is very hypothetical.
You know these people.
One thing I wouldn't do is go into a DeLorean in Orlando.
They're not strangers, though.
Uh-huh.
All right? So you hop in. They take off through the sky. And y'all end up in some time ago in China. All right? You get out and witness some thug trying to bully some girl into marriage.
Wow,
you're like
some serious
like looking
he's really
pre-roll for this question,
right?
Here.
Do you intervene? Or do you wait for Moi to do her thing? Like, come by and do her thing.
Oh, I see. So, like, I'm going back to the so-called origin of Wing Chun, which is, you know, the nun Moi teaches Yim Wing Chun how to defend herself against that suitor
asking,
there, right?
Yeah. Guess that's
and
what
so the
asking.
Question is, if I go back in time, do I cut in? But that would also then, in theory, nullify the art of Wing Chun from having a chance to develop.
How so? You teach, maybe you...
Oh, you mean I teach her instead of the nun?
I don't know.
That would be super rude according to Chinese martial arts customs, right? You have her teach her there and then I go, no, get out of here, right?
I got this.
Yeah. Also, it's 2021.
Do you knock
I cannot
the thug
take...
out?
Huh?
Do you knock the thug out and just like... Yim Wing Chun never gets taught anything.
No, because then that would nullify the entire Wing Chun style from ever happening.
No, it wouldn't. No, I've seen Infinity War.
Oh, so you mean someone's going to come back and retcon my mistake?
Yeah, absolutely. Uh-huh. Well, so I'm actually, it's Endgame, isn't it?
Yeah, believe I'm basically so. The equivalent of Thanos coming in and snapping Wing Chun out of existence.
So what do you do?
I don't do anything. I just get my popcorn and eat it. You just and watch.
All right, and you let
yeah. And I ask questions.
Come do her thing.
Yeah, and I see how the art was developed then, and then maybe I go.
Do you follow them?
Yeah, like maybe I go 50 years in the future, and then I'm creeping, watching with my popcorn, right? Can you imagine, like, you see these paintings of these original Wing Chun sifus, like Leung Chan, and then he's teaching his students, and in the background, there's just some dude in the window eating popcorn. And then it becomes a thing, like, in every generation, there's this one white dude eating popcorn in the background. For some reason, he's in every Chinese painting. And then I come and I go, all right, now I come back to my podcast.
Uh-huh.
And now I know everything about Ooh. The real history of Chinese martial arts because Ooh. I was there.
Ooh.
And then I'm like, all right. That would be an interesting podcast.
That would be dope.
Yeah, absolutely.
That would be dope.
Yeah.
Like when I asked you about that, yo, that's a nice shirt.
Right.
That Muhammad Ali shirt.
Yes.
He's like, yeah, I know.
I know.
I was there.
That's my famous line.
Man, I love these Dryzen questions.
You would,
this guy is
you?
Really, really good, man.
Full of yourself.
What?
Huh? No, sorry. Sorry, that was one of those indoor
How?
Thoughts.
How
that
so?
No, that's one of those indoor thoughts. Oh, I didn't mean to verbalize
out.
It. Yeah.
All right, next up we got Christian Creasy.
All right, a regular frequenter of the podcast.
Yes, sir.
Yes.
All right, very great episode, Sifu.
Not sure which episode, but I'll take whatever I can get.
Dre, you are doing an amazing job. Thank you.
Boom, boom.
Mikey, can you double check that he actually wrote that in the question? That sounds like Dre might have added that in himself.
Let's just check the date of it. I think yeah. It's like maybe it came after KFG 32.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah, could be. Yeah. Right. Yeah, when the Dre's better version was there.
Yeah.
Anyway, my question is, what are your thoughts on WT instructors and students doing too much chi sao?
That's a big problem in Wing Chun, right? And I discussed this on the last AMA when we had that internal martial arts question, right? And I wrote about this. Oh, here's like a random plug. The latest issue of Wing Chun Illustrated magazine. I have a column and the article is, it's funny, like now I'm going to tell you the title, but I might even not remember my own title. It's like, are you training for a Chi Sao death match?
Yeah.
And so the idea is that, and yeah, there's even your stupid photo in there. I think
know.
You made it in there, right?
Stupid and photo. So, get in there.
Well, it's all right because you're next to me, right?
Editor was high.
So anyway, you know, basically I said, like, look, you cannot become proficient in Wing Chun without training Chi Sao, right? Chi Sao is the heart and soul of Wing Chun. It allows us to activate a lot of these ideas from the forms and make them come alive, right? And it is also an organic vessel from which you can really activate the things in the traditional form and be able to apply them in some kind of context, right? But it's not the only thing we have. Because if you only train Chi Sao, well, then you're neglecting learning to deal with strikes coming at you at distance, which is very important. You know, it's like the same way people like to say, well, you know, people like to talk shit about ground fighting. Like, yeah, well, you know, 90% of, you know, street fights end up on the ground and, you know, but 100% of them start standing up and blah, 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 blah. And it's like, well, to a certain degree, you could say like you can get into that Chi Sao clinch range very quickly, but 100% of the fights are not going to start there. Okay.
It just makes me think of that time. Sorry. We have got. He went to some bathroom fight. He got suckered in. Yeah. Into some like, hey man, challenge me. Let's go to the bathroom and fight.
Oh
and
God,
the guy cool. literally is like, gets on the ground.
Oh yeah,
and
yeah.
Like, come on
his
fight.
Back. Yeah. On his back.
And Sar's looking at him like, yo, what is this shit? What are you done? He just kicks him in the face.
That's actually in The Simpsons when they do that scene.
Yes, yes.
It's like, oh yeah, I would. come lay on me on the ground and I will beat you with my superior BJJ skills.
Right, right, right.
It's okay, no. Bang.
Yeah, and so to a certain degree, only practicing chi sao is kind of the equivalent of going like, all right, I'm ready to fight. Let's get started. And you start in that highly contextualized position.
Sure.
Rather than looking at chi sao as a training method which teaches, which has a lot of value and teaches a lot of benefits that are very important for Wing Chun people to learn, but it's not the only thing we have. I mean, if you are not learning how to deal with punches and kicks coming at you at distance, or someone trying to, you know, grab you and take you to the floor, or someone not touching your hands and trying to punch you, but trying to grab you and then punch you and move your arms and take your back, put you in headlocks, put you in things that are outside of what we do in Wing Chun, if you're not practicing against that, then, I mean, you start to run into the same problem, right? It's just that it's not up to me to tell people what they're supposed to practice, right? So because for a lot of people who practice Wing Chun martial arts, it's just an enjoyable hobby, right? So if you enjoy your Wing Chun practice and, you know, you like to go and do your form and hit the wall bag and do your chi sao and do some light exchanges and that's like your thing, I'm not trying to shit on that,
yeah.
All right? But when you have Wing Chun people who then tend to get a little bit more vocal about how good they are at fighting or what they can do in fighting, and their training looks the same as the person who just comes and plays their forms and does some chi sao and does it as a hobby, but the guy who's very lippy about how good he is as a fighter is basically doing the same breakdown of training as the hobbyist. I go, well, no, all right? If you want to have a mouth about how good you are as a fighter, one, I wouldn't recommend that because there's always someone better than you. But two, then your overall training should look a little bit different, right? You should have time for sparring that doesn't start from contact, all right? And you should also do some type of sparring where the person you're fighting against is not using Wing Chun, all right? Is coming at you with non-Wing Chun attacks and grappling and non-Wing Chun kicks and non-Wing Chun ideas and coming at you in a very non-linear way. Then, okay, you can start to, in my opinion, what you say might have a little bit more weight, right? But certainly most Wing Chun schools, in my opinion, do too much chi sao.
Mm-hmm.
But again, that's only if you're judging the combat efficacy of what they're teaching, right? It's totally fine for Wing Chun sifus to teach in a very traditional way and do mostly chi sao, and their students are maybe not that concerned with fighting. Average person that doesn't have the need to fight because of their occupation, or they don't live in a dodgy neighborhood, or they don't get into fights because they're not an idiot.
Yeah.
It's perfectly okay to do Wing Chun as a hobby and not to have to have a black eye every time you leave training, right?
Mm.
So it's not for me to tell people that if they don't enjoy the art of Wing Chun in a way that is congruent with the better fighters in Wing Chun, then they're not doing it. I mean, that's also not my point at all. You can enjoy, life is short. You do the thing you like and do it the way you want to do it, right? But if you want to have a conversation about combat efficacy, then we need to then talk about other things.
Okay.
Hey, Kung Fu Genius listeners, if you're a Wing Chun practitioner, especially from the WT or Leung-Ting line, and want to get really personalized immersion training with me, you can now apply to do an immersion course with me here in NYC, or if you like the sun, in my Florida home near Orlando. These courses are for instructors or anyone who's serious about learning the art in detail and working hard. I teach in program blocks like Siunam Tao, Cham Kyu, Biu Ji, Wooden Dummy, and those include the Chi Sao theory, fighting applications, and training methods as well. If you're really serious about learning Wing Chun, check out the link in the description below to find out about applying for a spot. For those of you who are not quite ready to do full private immersion training, you can also apply for a spot at either our winter or summer intensive training camps. We have a few spots available for non-city Wing Chun students, so apply today. A link for those options are in the description below. And now back to me.
Next up, Robert Santiago. Please provide a review of the film Shang-Chi and The Legend of the Ten Rings and critique the martial arts practice in the film. I enjoyed the film and especially loved that the first strike thrown by the hero in the city bus scene was a Chung Kyun.
Was a vertical fist, yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
I haven't seen the movie. You've seen it.
Yeah, I have seen it. So okay. Obviously, I'm not going to give any spoilers because, like, their entire YouTube channels, that their whole thing is like, doing reviews on these films, and you know, no one is watching the Kung Fu Genius for his hot takes on the latest Marvel films, all right? But I'll give a non-spoiler review of it, right? So I was pleasantly surprised, you know, because after Endgame, I think it's kind of difficult to, you go, all right, where does Marvel go from here, right? They had these three phases, and they told this big story, and it had a huge culmination, right? So now they're in, I believe, what's called Phase 4, right? So they got to introduce new characters and new storylines, and they're going to have to build up another type of end game type thing. So now we're kind of at the back of the beginning again, right? So there's a little bit of superhero fatigue, I think, and Marvel fatigue, because it's just been so many of these films and TV series and things like that.
I'm looking forward to She-Hulk, by the way.
Yeah, I heard it's going to be a little more lighthearted, right?
Uh-huh.
So I you know, Shang-Chi, the original Shang-Chi was based on Bruce Lee. He came out through the because of the Kung Fu craze. Like, Stan Lee basically created this character with the idea of Bruce Lee in mind, right?
Okay.
And master of Kung Fu and all of that. And so it's cool to see that. And yeah, I went in not quite knowing if I would like it or not. I was very pleasantly surprised. The fight scenes are pretty good. Mm. I mean, in general, like Marvel, these are big budget movies, so the fight scenes are, you know, for that type of fighting, they do a really, really good job, right? Generally, Marvel films are not martial art movies, right? But obviously you have elements of martial arts in there. But Shang-Chi is much more of a martial arts-based superhero. So the late Brad Allen, right? So Brad Allen, who was the first and maybe only Westerner to be in the Jackie Chan stunt team, who famously fought Jackie Chan in the movie Gorgeous, and that amazing.
Okay.
They have like two fight scenes in there. They're amazing. And he became a member of the Jackie Chan stunt team and, you know, did all these films over there in Asia. And then eventually he started to get films in the West. And
that's dope.
Yeah. And finally he got to do the choreography for Shang-Chi along with, I think, Andy Cheng, who's another veteran of Hong Kong stunt films and stuff. And Brad Allen died suddenly, just like maybe a month and a half ago, 2 months ago. Like, I mean, he's just a couple years older than me, right? Just suddenly. Still don't even know what it was. And he was amazing. So for like listeners of the podcast, if you're not familiar with Brad Allen, when you're done watching this episode, just put Brad Allen, Jackie Chan in YouTube and watch their two fights in Gorgeous. And you see the guy was absolutely amazing. So he
so this has that Hong Kong element.
It has that Hong Kong feel to it. The first real fight scene, which is the one you see in the trailer, is the scene on the bus. And it's really fantastic. I mean, obviously, there's a lot of CGI and there's a lot of that kind of stuff going on, which is par for the course in the new style. You're not going to see 80s Hong Kong style action anymore where they're really jumping through windows and stuff. But no, it was quite good. I thought it was really well done. I thought that Simu Liu, who's the actor who plays Shang-Chi, I thought he did a really great job, and I was pleasantly surprised. And it's got all these veterans of Hong Kong cinema in the movie, right? So you have obviously Tony Leung, who plays his father, and you know, who Tony Leung played the Grandmaster and played Yip Man in the Grandmaster, and then you have Michelle Yeoh. And you also have Yuen Hua is in the movie too. Bruce Lee's old stunt double, right? So you see, and like you'll see in the background, you'll see like a lot of these kind of older cats in there, which is really fantastic. So if you haven't seen Shang-Chi, I would definitely recommend it. There is also a documentary that just came out recently. I believe it was produced by Tin Siu Ho on Hong Kong stuntmen.
Ooh,
and
I think I heard you mention this the other
day. I heard about it, and Sifu David Peterson gave me the opportunity to watch it. And then so I just watched it this morning, and it was amazing because you really see, they interview like all these old stuntmen, like people who are in the Sammo Hung stunt team, Jackie Chan stunt team. I think the Chinese title is Long Fu Mo Si, which is like a tiger and dragon, you know, stuntman kind of like Mo Si. Mo is martial, Si is same like Sifu Si, right?
Yeah.
So it's amazing. They talk about the evolution and with Bruce Lee. And what's amazing is at this point, I've met so many Hong Kong stuntmen, a lot of people that I met, Siu Hao, Cheng Wing Hon, Li Fai, they're in there, right? So it's like, wow, I met this person. And it's really good, really well done.
Okay.
So I can highly, highly recommend that. Yeah. If you want a little bit of the old school in your life.
Where can I find this?
You probably have to look for it online.
Where can we find
it? Yeah, I'm sure there's some of the bigger companies are you know like out there can stream it maybe, yeah. But it's brand new. You might have to purchase it somewhere. I don't know.
All right. I like it. All right. Next up, we got Philip Jakimowski. I heard that Bruce used to do Seelemtau with his body under tension. What's your opinion on this? Should we do Seelemtau relaxed or under tension? Thank you.
That's a good question. So the short answer is that in general, in Yip Man Wing Chun, all right, regardless of the lineage within Yip Man Wing Chun, the general consensus, all right, now of course, how many Wing Chun Sifus does it take to screw in a light bulb? All right, about 100, all right, one to do it and 99 to say that's not the way Sifu showed it, all right? And so, of course, you're going to have people disagree on these things, even within the narrow band of the Yip Man lineage, right?
Yeah.
But in general, all right, this is a very general statement. Most of the students of Yip Man or the lineages that teach some variation of Yip Man Wing Chun, generally the consensus is that the Seelemtau form should be done in a relaxed way, all right? Of course, you'll always find outliers, but in general, you will find the consensus seems to be that the Seelemtau form should be practiced in a relaxed way, all right? Because that is part of what the form is supposed to help you do.
It's supposed to help
you abandon your own power, right? And, you know, if you're tensing your body and you're tensing your arms and someone grabs onto you and pulls you, you're going to fall forward because your arm, when you're tensing, it becomes one unit. So you're like a handle. You can be jostled around a lot more easily than if your arms are pliable and you can adapt according to how you're being pushed or pulled. So how are you going to learn to be pliable? Well, probably you should start learning to relax, right? Because if you do everything under tension, and you fight someone bigger and stronger than you, it's kind of not the way to go, right? Besides tensing your arms, you can get a basic isometric effect on there, but this is not like the best way to develop straight muscle strength. I mean, you're better off hitting a bag if you want to develop power and like just standing there and squeezing the hell out of your arms while you're doing the Seelemtau form is not the quickest and most efficient path to becoming quote unquote powerful, in my opinion, from what I understand, from what I've read in sports science and performance. It doesn't make sense from a sports physiological standpoint that you would just be under high tension doing the Seelemtau form and that having a athletic benefit, even though I know traditional martial arts don't like the term athlete, but I mean athletic meaning benefit your overall performance. So I also heard about Bruce Lee performing the form under tension, mm-hmm. but in the two videos we have of Bruce Lee performing the Seelemtau form, there's one where he's wearing like a button-up shirt, which is, I think, shot the same day where he did that cheese out with Taki. And then there's another one where he's wearing kind of his more Jeet Kune Do-like uniform and he does the Seelemtau form. In both of those videos, he does it in a pretty standard, I would say, relaxed kind of way. Him doing it under tension is a hearsay. I've also heard people say that. But in the two videos where he's performed it, he doesn't do it that way. Sifu Chan Chi Man, good friend of mine, told me that he would walk down the street in Sam Soi Po with Bruce Lee, and Bruce would, you know, practice his Seelemtau form while they were walking. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Chan Chi Man would tell him, like, hey, you know, quit doing that. Because, one, Bruce Lee was a movie star. He was a child movie star, right? So already people are looking at him when he walks down the street because people know who he is. And this is, you know, late 50s Bruce Lee before he went to the States.
All right.
And Chan said he would, like, tell him, hey, man, stop doing that. You're drawing more and more attention to yourself, right? But Sifu Chan never told me that he was there squeezing the piss out of his arm doing it under tension, right? So it in my opinion, from my understanding, that doesn't make sense, all right? The Seelemtau form is supposed to introduce new body mechanics, supposed to teach relaxation, power from the elbow, focus, mindfulness, all of these kind of things. And tensing the piss out of your body is not conducive to better athletic performance, in my opinion.
Sweet.
Mm-hmm.
All right. I think we have time for maybe one or two more.
Sure.
All right. Let's go into Santa Monica Training.
Okay. Cool handle.
Word. All right. What's going on here? Dre is framed for some crime and being sent to a maximum security prison.
Yeah, framed.
Ha! Someone knows.
Yeah, someone knows a lot.
It's a little close to the vest here.
Yeah. Hold on. All right. He has 1 year to train, and you have to pick 3 other instructors he gets to train with other than yourself.
Okay.
Before he gets locked up, who do you pick for him to train with? Can be martial arts, strength training, etc. Okay.
Wow, that's crazy. And the guy is assuming you're going to jail. I got a year. It's almost a little bit like the Yim Wing Chun story. You got a year or 9 months or whatever to prepare for this fight.
Okay.
And you got to get trained up for it. You got to go into Rocky montage, right? And you know what you're going to be protecting yourself against in prison. All right. You're going to have to learn lots of Ganso and Gumso, right?
Right.
Those two techniques you're going to have to get really good at.
180 turn. Right?
180 degree turn. Yeah, Ganso, yeah. Gumso, pinning arms, right? Protect yourself.
Yeah.
Let's see. You should definitely have some kind of strength training regimen, right? Because you're going to have a lot of time in prison to work out. So you might as well learn how to work out correctly. So I would get Dr. Kenneth Jay to do your, physical fitness training, sports and conditioning, right? So teach you how to get strong and lift and do cardio and all that kind of stuff.
Get me into Thor status.
Yeah, so you can run away from dudes when they're chasing you.
Short Thor.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Running door. Yeah.
Sure. And and I mean, look, in prison, it's, I think, about whether you have cred or not, making connections, right?
Yeah, I gotta get street cred. Training.
Yeah, you could be the toughest dude, but there's
no one knows.
Well, no, and then there's 3 dudes who decide to corner you. It doesn't matter how tough you are, all right? There's 3 dudes and 1 guy is Ving Rhames say with a pair of pliers and a blowtorch. All right, what are you gonna do, right? So, I would have Kenneth Jay for your physical fitness and strength conditioning.
Mm-hmm.
I would get Jan to tattoo your face,
because
you need that kind of street cred. All right, put just like some crazy, I don't know, buff Jesus
like tattoo training,
buff Jesus across your head or something like that, right?
It depends what tattoos. What if he puts Mickey Mouse on there? Then you're screwed, isn't
it? Oh, yeah, that's right. But I'm sure Jan would know what kind of prison tattoo to give
prison
you.
Tats.
Yeah, yeah, he, I'm sure he knows about
I go
that.
In with prison tats.
Yeah. By the way, he told me a crazy story once. Like, because, he's in our student Jan, he's a tattoo artist. And so he's in all, tattoo people talk about other tattoos and bad tattoos and stuff. And so apparently there was a prison in Russia, and there was a dude in there who was given other inmates tattoos.
Yeah.
Chinese tattoos. And so there's a bunch of Russians in there getting Chinese tattoos from this dude in Russian prison, right? That's what he told me, all right? And if it's not a true story, it's still a funny story. But the question was, well, where does this Russian dude learn all this Chinese from?
Okay.
Apparently, he had a Chinese takeout menu. So you can imagine all these hardened Russian prisoners with, Kung Pao chicken tattooed to their arm.
Shit,
sweet and sour rice. Anyway, I thought that was great. All right, so we got Kenneth Jay for your strength, physical fitness conditioning. We got Sifu Jan to get you hooked up with tattoos.
Okay.
Right? And then for it can't be me. I'll probably just have you train with Nicole. And there you go. That's your dream team.
Dream team.
To keep Dre protected.
My CJ.
Right.
Sign me up.
Yeah, for going to prison.
Yeah.
For selling counterfeit Macs.
That's the crime?
That's the crime right there, yeah.
Federal.
Yes.
Yeah, stop selling bad raincoats.
My goodness. I think we got time for one more, right?
Definitely.
All right, admit. What does a typical week of training look like for you? Obviously Wing Chun. You also look like you lift weights.
Lift weights, bro.
Yeah, bro. I remember you mentioning BJJ. So interested in how you do it all. The structure, the intensity. Also your nutrition protocol. Hope you pick up this request. Thank you.
Well, that's a great question. That question is probably like a whole episode by itself. Well, right. Now, I mean, my training schedule is a little bit lighter than it was because as I mentioned a number of times, about 4 months ago, I got rotator cuff shoulder surgery. So I just started really training, like going back to the gym upstairs basically last week. Like I'm really just like now starting to lift light weights and moving around more. And so I'm not like my normal totally jacked bro self, right? Because, you know, in the opening of the Kung Fu Genius, I have that, you know, that photo, right? Like that. And that was maybe about 5 months before I had shoulder surgery. So that's kind of what I was looking like up to the day of my shoulder surgery. And then for 4 months, I can't do anything. And when it doesn't matter how built you are or how many muscles you have, the moment you don't train for 4 months, your body right. is like, you don't need any of this. Yes, you're just losing all of that stuff very quickly, right? But because you had it already, it also comes back much faster.
Yeah.
All right, so after, about a week and a half training again, I look and it's like, it comes back a lot quick. If you had it, it'll come back a lot quicker. That's the nice thing, because you have that. That's actually what they really mean by muscle memory. Mm-hmm. Muscle memory is often conflated with having something to do with coordination. But muscle memory is actually like you've had these muscles and they go away and you can get them back. And so because you the tissue is able to grow to that size. So, but let's say kind of right before my shoulder surgery, what my regular schedule was, okay? So usually the strength training, I try to keep it down to about 3 times a week because I don't want to have to be doing that all the time, because my primary focus is martial arts. Yeah. I'm not a lifter, I'm not a bodybuilder, and I'm not a fitness bro. For me, fitness has to serve two functions. One, it has to make me more physically capable of doing the things that I want to do. Mm-hmm. All right. And that is not just martial arts. So but it's everything I do in my fitness routine has to make me better at my martial arts, better at Wing Chun, but also better, like, you know, I don't want to be like with my kids, I don't want to be some dude who can't squat down and pick them up.
Right.
And so I need to make sure that I keep my mobility, my flexibility, the ability to play and be playful and be flexible, all that kind of stuff. So nothing I do in my strength training routine is allowed to mess with that.
Okay.
And so I'm not going to do anything that's going to now limit my mobility or something like that.
Good
right?
morning.
Exactly. Right. So one, my workout has to enhance and improve the quality of my life, not just the way I physically look. Right. And even in that, there's a couple different things. One, I want to maintain the physical fitness and mobility, but also I want to make sure that I do injury prevention. So that I'm training things, like, especially in Wing Chun, we have very limited types of movements we do, because it's just about what's effective in Wing Chun, right? So we keep everything kind of on the sagittal plane. Mm-hmm. So I make sure I do a lot of like horizontal stuff, and I make sure that I break these different planes of motion so that I'm also training my body in planes of motion that are not trained in Wing Chun, so that I have a more well-rounded, not just physique, but like my physical fitness is more well-rounded. Because some Wing Chun people are really strong in all the directions they do Wing Chun, but unbelievably weak in any other direction. And in that direction that you're weak in, that's where you get injured. So I make sure that my physical fitness allows for that. And also, I mean, certainly there's a component of you want to look good, you want to feel good, right? I mean, we do abs training and martial arts and core training because we want to have a strong core for getting punched. But who doesn't want to do abs training to have good looking abs, right?
Okay.
So to say that there's no physical like vanity going on when you're training that kind of stuff, I mean, for me, I mean, that's not true.
No,
it's part of it, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's not the number one reason. I want to make sure that it helps and enhances my Wing Chun and keeps me healthy and keeps me fit.
I'm all about the vanity.
You know? Yeah, but I mean, you know, for anyone to say that has nothing to do with it, I think for some people maybe, but most people do. You know, you have abs because you want to have abs, right? So anyway, I try not to do like strength training, like let's say lifting, more than 3 times a week. I basically follow Greg Doucette's, Coach Greg from
Deuce.
YouTube.
Coach
he has,
Deuce.
Yeah, he has kind of like a couple plans, And one of them is like a, you know, one like a, the full split. That's a little bit more for bodybuilders. Like you have a leg day and then an upper body day. Then you take a break. Then you have another leg day and an upper body day. And that's all your strength training that week. And then he has got an alternate one where you do full body, but you do that 3 times a week. And but the full body splits are like you have more pushing stuff on one day, more pulling stuff on the other day. So even though you're doing the whole body, it's still balanced. I prefer that because even according to John Little, like, you know, Bruce Lee liked to do full body stuff rather than splitting it. And I think, you know, as a martial artist, you want to save time. But every once in a while, I'll change it up. I'll go from the 3 day split, like full body split. And then I'll do the 4 day one where I do legs on one day, upper on another day, take a break, legs and then upper.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll do that just because after, let's say, about 6 to 8 weeks, your body gets kind of used to what you're doing. So I just like to switch it up a little bit to give my body a little bit of novelty, right? So I'll do the 3 day split for like 2 months.
Yeah, they say, and you got to trick your body.
Yeah, and then, but most people trick their body too early. You got to like, you got to stay with it for a little while. And then I'll do like that full body split thing for like a couple weeks. And then so I, within the workout, I'll add a little bit of variety. But basically my strength training is 3 to 4 times a week. Usually it's 3 times a week. And cardio I do every day. So at home I have like an Airdyne bike, the one where you use the hands. That one is a lot more beneficial in my opinion than just using the bike. I don't like to run because running just ruins your joints. And why do I want to put extra miles and ruin my joints when I'm doing martial arts, right? You don't want to have messed up. All my students, like, who run all the time, they're always the ones that have the most jacked up everything. Ah, my feet, ah, my knees, ah, my hips. I'm like, you're literally putting miles on the body, like the striking surfaces every time you go like this, right?
I feel
and
personally attacked.
Oh, wait, sorry, I forgot. Actually, I totally forgot Mikey runs.
Mikey's a runner.
It sounded like I'm just being a dick.
Hey, Phil.
When the truth is, I'm just thinking about Alan.
Oh, yeah, that's great. That's great. Now, I feel like
sorry,
running
Mikey.
Is like you're just in a car and just bouncing up and up.
Yeah,
only if you road. Don't know how to do it.
Yeah, but like with the Airdyne bike, you can go really really hard because you also engage the upper body, so you got more overall body engagement.
Never tried the
Airdyne. It's really great because you're not just using your legs, you can use your arms, which means you're spreading the load, which means you can go a little harder for training your heart. Mm-hmm. Whereas opposed to like if you just have something where you're only using your legs. Your legs can get tired a little bit more fast because they're the only things that are working. So that means you cannot go longer training your heart. But if you're doing something like rowing where you're using the whole body, or you're doing
rowing.
The Airdyne bike, because it's both things, you're kind of spreading that load there, which is a little easier on your body, but allows you to go harder and longer. So you're training your heart, which is the whole point of cardio. I mean, yeah. We train cardio to burn calories and lose fat, but we really train cardio because the most important muscle is your heart. And so you want to make sure that you train it regularly. So 5 days a week, I do 30 minutes on the bike.
Okay.
And I like to use the rower. The rower machine for me is the best, but I haven't started using the rower yet since the shoulder surgery. So when I start to feel that my shoulder can deal with this plane of motion, then I will go back to using the rower again. But until then, I use the Airdyne bike. I do 30 minutes a day, and I vary it. On days in between my strength training, let's say I do strength training 3 times a week, on the 2 days in between, I usually go lighter. I'll do like 30 minutes, like a little more granny style, right? Mm-hmm. But on the days where I do my strength training, I'll go a little bit harder, but not so hard that I'm going to mess up my strength training. All right. But I don't go like crazy ballistic on the bike. Okay. And I usually switch it up a little bit. Some days I go easier. Some days I go a little harder. I have like a little game where I watch the... I'll watch a UFC fight,
okay.
Which is like I'll watch a championship UFC fight. This is actually really fun if you have an Airdyne bike. So I have my Airdyne bike and I put like on YouTube or something, I'll put a full UFC championship fight, which is 5 5-minute rounds. And then so I usually bike for 30 minutes. So, you know, you have 5 5-minute rounds, it's 25 minutes, but you got like the minute breaks in between. So basically mm-hmm. it's 30 minutes. So then I'll look for a fight that goes the distance.
The distance, yeah.
All right. And then so what I'll do is I'll play it and then I'll kind of warm up. And then when the fight starts, for those 5 minutes that the round is going on, I keep a pretty high cadence. Like I push, 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 push. And then when the fighters are throwing combinations, like lots of combinations, I'll go even faster. And then when they're done, I go back to normal push. And every time there's a major exchange, I'll do like five really hard strokes, ba 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 ba, and then go back to normal. And then so if there's a lot of striking, I'm doing that like almost the whole thing, ooh, right? And then you, the round is done, and then I don't stop. I just go really granny for 1 minute.
Okay.
And then the round starts again, and I go this. So basically, I try to like imitate. I mean, look, it's not the same as being in the cage. No, don't make any mistake. But what I do is
punches in a
yeah.
way.
But what I do is I try to mimic the inconsistent cadence of a fight because it's not just like staying the same level. So I'll do it. But I don't do that all the time because that's pretty intense. Mm-hmm. You can do 30 minutes easy or you can do 30 minutes hard. So when I decide to do that like UFC championship fight, like biking, that's like on the day where I'm like, all right, today I'm going hard because I'm going to really push it. So that's a lot of fun. I like doing stuff like that. So basically I have 3 days a week, either full body split and 5 days a week cardio. Sometimes I'll do the 4 day split if I feel like doing it. Heavy bag training. I hit the heavy bag, once a week. All right. And the reason I don't hit it more is because I'm not a competitive fighter. I don't need to hit the bag 3-4 times a week. I'm not a kickboxer, but I do like to hit it on Friday. And then I have a workout. I have this whole bag death workout, which is 25 minutes. It's pretty exhausting, but I love it. And what's nice about hitting the bag, like having a very tough heavy bag routine once a week, is you can see the improvement. Because it's a week of strength training, a week of cardio, and then so I'm kind of fresh because I'm not hitting the bag every day. So Friday I'll hit the bag and I can feel like, wow, I felt I had good power and I didn't get tired. And other weeks I'll do it and I'm like, man, I was really lagging. And I can use that as a litmus test to see, what did I train this week? Did I sleep poorly, whatever? So I like doing that once a week because it's a little bit of a litmus test in terms of like, where's my overall performance right now? Whereas if you did it every day, you'd be a little more worn down. It would be a little more difficult to gauge that, right? Mm-hmm. I hit the wall bag though, 3 times a week. But my wall bag training is maybe 1,000 punches, 10 sets of 100. And it's not ballistic. It's like concentrated practice and I'll do some kicking. Every day I do the forms. Every day I do our Wing Chun warm-up. And of course, most days I'm training and teaching with my students. So it's difficult to quantify the amount of training time I get, but it's pretty regular. And then when I have a chance to train with Magno, I'll train with Magno. And also with Sifu Craig here, one of my assistants, we train regularly together as well. So it's a lot of training, you know, and it changes week to week. My strength and cardio is the most consistent, and my heavy bag training and wall bag training and general Wing Chun training is consistent. And usually 1 day a week I'll focus more on the dummy, 1 day a week I'll focus more on Byuji, 1 day a week I'll focus more on the pole or the knives. So I kind of like, because we have 6 forms in Wing Chun, and I basically train about 6 days a week. So I usually give one form each day. So like I'll do like more Chumkyu on Tuesday and more Byuji on Wednesday. And like, so that I have some time to really practice it in detail. But it's different every week, which is why it's kind of fun because I write my schedule Sunday night. Mm-hmm. I look at the week, I look at my teaching schedule, I look what I have going on, and then I schedule in the time for me to work out. No matter how busy you are, you have to schedule your workout like it's an appointment and you have to make it non-negotiable. Because if you go, all right, well, when I'm done doing the things I'm going to do, then I'll go and do a workout. No, you won't. If I do that, say that for my cardio, like, oh, when I'm done doing it, then I'll hit the bike. Sometimes I miss that. But if I say at 5 p.m., I'm going to hit the bike for 30 minutes. I put that in my schedule. That's a non-negotiable appointment.
Okay.
So you write it down. So you have to schedule your training the way you schedule all your other appointments. Now, you might not say exactly what you're going to do. I'm a big fan of, if you come into the gym and you feel a little bit run down, then and you had this big plan to do this big crazy workout and you go to the gym and you're like, well, I'm going to go home. I don't feel like doing that. You don't do that. You go to the gym. Let's say you have zero energy. Then just do something really light. Pick up a couple weights. Do something super simple. Do some light cardio. Do something super, super basic. You'll often find that once you do that, you'll end up wanting to do a little bit more.
Okay.
But you don't want to get discouraged because you fell off one day, or you don't want to get discouraged because you had plans of doing this crazy workout you just saw on YouTube, and when you get in the gym, you have no desire, right? Just do something. Do a little bit every day. And don't neglect your sleep, and don't neglect your nutrition. That was another question there. That's just calories in, calories out. Watch how much you eat. That's pretty much the way you go. Drink lots of water and sleep a lot.
Sleep as much as you can.
Cool. And I guess that's all I got to say about that. All right, everyone. So what did you think about today's episode of The Kung Fu Genius? And what questions do you have for me on a future episode? Don't forget to like this video and subscribe to The Kung Fu Genius. Turn on those notifications and share this video wherever you have social media platforms. And I'll see you guys next time. Word is I'm a Kung Fu Genius. Technique speaks for me, not lineage. Forget Jet Li, cause I'm the one. Many call me Sifu, but to you I'm Seagung. And I produce masters, you surpassed us. Your Kung Fu stiffer than corpse and caskets. City Wing Chun is the house I built. Violate the gate and your blood gets spilt. Alex Richter, always the victor.
The genius will be answering
all sorts of hot nonsense from YouTube, like every week.
All right, peoples.
What a dick. Stop.
The genius will be answering all sorts of hot nonsense from you.
What was that?
Yeah. His cadence was a little off.
All right, pup. Stop, man. Give me the giggle. All right, peeps.
What a dick. Good job, man. Good job. Awesome.
That was actually great.
Good job, man. I'm proud of you. All right. You can teach an old dog easy tricks.
Easy tricks. Pineapples, pumpkin.
Apple, peaches, pumpkin pie.
Apple, peaches, pumpkin pie.
Apple, peaches, pumpkin pie. Apple, peaches, pumpkin pie. Oh,